The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a Monday. This is what's supposed to be the last full week of Donald Trump's administration. Supposed to be, but hopefully he won't be there for the entire week. But we really don't know. Everything is sort of up in the air. I believe that Nancy Pelosi is serious, for once, that she wants to impeach the motherfucker. Because, frankly, her life was in danger. Really. I mean, this was personal. Although Donald Trump committed all sorts of impeachable offenses before, and George Bush did before him, Nancy Pelosi has never really been on board with impeachment. But this time, they came for her. Her life was in danger, as were the lives of the 434 other members of the House and the 100 members of the Senate. I mean, we came seconds away from what could have been a mass execution. I mean, judging from the videos that we've seen, what could have happened is, I honestly don't really want to think about it. There's that one cop, and shoot, I didn't write his name down, but we've all seen the video where he's alone and this mob is coming up on him and they follow him up the stairs. And you see, he looks to his left, and what he sees to his left are the doors to the Senate chamber that were unguarded, and we later learned still unlocked. And so he pushed one of the rioters who were chasing him to get them to follow him, to not go left, instead to go right and follow him in the other direction, which they did, giving the senators that were in the chamber still a chance to get out and saved their lives. I mean, he really saved their lives. The cop for whom the flags are flying at half staff. I'm terrible because I didn't write. Again, I don't have the names in front of me. But the cop who was killed was murdered. He was beaten to death by these throngs of supposedly people who support the blue. They hit him. They hit him with a fire extinguisher. And then apparently with a pole from a flag, an American flag, and whatever else they had handy, they beat him to death. They talked about three other people who were killed that died of medical emergencies. One guy apparently died of a heart attack after he tased himself in the balls. I'm not kidding. The man tased himself in the balls and had a heart attack. Sometimes, how does the saying go? You reap what you sow? I think he did. And then there were the there was the other person who was trampled. Now, I know some of you are, you know, my age and remember maybe that Who concert, I want to say in, I don't remember where it was, where fans were trampled. This woman, I think it was a woman, was trampled. These people, I don't even want to call them people, these animals, these miscreants, these rioters, when they were, I don't know, they were being run out or whatever. You saw the crowds of people in the videos. This one person was trampled. Nobody stopped to help them up. They trampled this person further until he or she died. Cincinnati. Thank you. That was where the Who concert was. Yeah. But this was a mob. It was sent at the behest of Donald Trump. I'm not going to play you the audio of him. You've heard it. You've heard it enough this weekend, I'm sure. But just going back through some of the video, it's just astounding what went on. So we have a busy show for you today. A little later on in the hour, we're going to talk to a Florida colleague of mine, sort of. I've never met him in person, but I've hinted over the last few months that I was involved in a project here in Florida that, at the urging of a friend who unfortunately passed away a few months ago, I ran for and was seated as a precinct committee person here where I live in Broward County, Florida. And the reason I did so, and again, I know I've been sort of giving you bits and pieces. That's because this whole thing was done in secret. It was a clandestine operation where a group of progressives really had the goal of taking over the Florida Democratic Party from the inside. Because you know, you should know, the Florida Democratic Party is horrible. Just horrible. And that's what I've discovered since I've been a part of it for these last couple of months. Well, the elections for the chair of the Florida Democratic Party happened on Saturday. So now the subterfuge is over. We can come out of the shadows and explain what's been going on. And I just came to the party, literally and figuratively, late. So I'm going to have on one of the organizers, one of the coordinators of Not Me, Us, which this was an offshoot of. So we'll talk to Ryler Calabrese from Tallahassee a little later in the hour. But still, you know, reeling from the events of this weekend and wondering what's going to happen next, the FBI put out an alert today. And why the Capitol Police said they didn't know, they had no idea, they had no intelligence that there was going to be violence, that they were prepared for a peaceful protest. I'm sorry, I knew. I said on this program on Tuesday, do not go out there and counter protest. Leave them alone. Stay home. Stay away. Make it be all them. Everybody knew. So I don't know. Maybe our guests can explain some of that to us. But the FBI is putting out alerts saying there are armed protests scheduled in every state between now and Inauguration Day. What happened on Wednesday, it feels like yesterday, some people are saying maybe this was the beginning, maybe this is the middle. It's certainly not the end. Here, an FBI bulletin obtained by ABC News reporter Aaron Kutursky claims that, quote, the armed protests are being planned at all 50 state capitals from January 16th through at least January 20th, and at the U.S. Capitol from January 17th through the 20th. What's more, at least some of these protesters have vowed to employ violence if Trump is either impeached or removed via the 25th Amendment. Here's a quote. They have warned that if Congress attempts to remove POTUS via the 25th Amendment, a huge uprising will occur, the FBI bulletin states. Additionally, the bulletin says that one group of Trump supporters, quote, is calling for storming state, local, and federal government courthouses and administrative buildings in the event Trump is removed prior to Inauguration Day. We are living in strange times, my friends. So I'm going to bring in our first guest, and I'm excited to talk to him. He's a Nation contributor. His name is Brendan O'Connor. His new piece, Up at the Nation, that was written right after all hell broke loose on Wednesday, is called A Preview of What's to Come. And that's pretty frightening in and of itself. He's a journalist, a writer in New York. He's written for The Baffler, The New Yorker, The New York Times. And he's got a new book on the way, I think in just a week or two, called Blood Red Lines, How Nativism Fuels the Right. And Brendan O'Connor, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I wish we didn't have to talk about this, but we have to talk about this. So it's my pleasure to have you here. It's not my pleasure that this is, you know, what we're talking about. But that aside, so when you saw this unfolding on Wednesday, what were your thoughts? What were your original thoughts?
That's a great question. I have been following this movement and a lot of the groups that were involved in what happened last Wednesday for several years now. And I got to tell you, I was shocked. I did not expect like you were just saying, I knew that something was going to happen on Wednesday. I knew that they were coming in prepared. But the level of militancy and confrontation, I was really surprised. I was taken aback.
Were you also surprised by what was a lack of preparation, a lack of response from law enforcement, that there was no presence there anywhere, seemingly.
Yes and no. I mean, I think that what we have come to understand is that the way that law enforcement at city, state, federal levels respond to progressive and left-wing protests is very different than the way that they respond to the right. But at the same time, the story of what happened on Wednesday is pretty complicated insofar as there were, you know, open brawls, open violence between Trump supporters and the Capitol Police. But it is also clear that the leadership of the Capitol Police was looking the other way for weeks at a time in the weeks leading up to this. They really hung the rank and file officers out to dry.
It is astounding because we all knew. Look, I'm not in law enforcement. I knew it was going to get ugly out there just from talking about it, paying attention to the news. Of course, they knew what was coming. But what we saw in a lot of the footage and a lot of the photos and a lot of the video were cops seemingly on the side of these, I can't call them protesters, rioters, marauders, whatever we want to call them, opening the gates and letting them in, posing for selfies with them. I was surprised to see at the end when everyone was, you know, made to leave the building, one of these cops helping a woman down the steps at the Capitol. It's like, what? If she was black, she would have been pushed down the steps at the Capitol. And I'm grateful that the little bit of media that I watched this weekend seemed to be, you know, hitting on those points, too. It was obvious to everyone. So what do we do about it? Where do we go from here? Is this a problem? Have you you've got the book coming out, Blood Red Lines. Is this part of what you've investigated? Do we know how deep law enforcement is with the Trump loyalties?
I do think that there is an immense need for deep investigation of the level of, if not coordination and complicity, at least sympathy among the higher echelons of law enforcement to both Donald Trump in particular, but also to white supremacists and proto-fascist movements generally. We saw plenty of off-duty police officers and law enforcement, active duty military participate in the attempted self-coup on Wednesday. So yeah, so the first order of business really does have to be investigating how deep does this go? How high does this go? But in the longer term, I think what will bear out is that, yeah, these institutions are on the wrong side of history, just top to bottom. And there needs to be a deep rethinking of what the role of law enforcement really is. And I think that was the critique that was advanced by that is advanced by the ongoing movement for Black Lives that we were particularly that was particularly articulated this summer.
Right. So do you think that once Joe Biden gets into office and replaces the heads of these agencies, that there will be an overall attitude adjustment, or is the problem in the rank and file and that's where their loyalties are?
I am not optimistic. I think that this is an institutional and structural problem. I think that replacing the individual heads of agencies, if they are shown to have been negligent or complicit in what happened, sure, those people need to be gotten rid of. But there should be no illusions that simply doing so will stop something like this from happening in the future, because it isn't just down to the leadership. It has to do with the history of these institutions and the history of policing writ large.
Wow. So, Brendan O'Connor, let's go back in time a little bit. We can go back about 10, 12 years, right? It was 11 years. 2010, that's when the whole Tea Party movement, the tea baggers emerged, right? They were screaming. They were pissed off that we elected a black man president. They came out in force in the 2 years before those 2010 midterms and raised hell, but they were seemingly harmless. I mean, they were walking around with tea bags hanging from their hats until, you know, they understood what the term tea bagger meant. And then, yes? Chad Wolf resigned. Chad Wolf, head of Homeland Security, resigned. All right, breaking news. Acting head of Homeland Security, because he never could have gotten Senate confirmed for that position, but he resigned nonetheless. Did he resign because of Trump's actions or his own is the question. You have any thoughts on Chad Wolf resigning?
I mean, I'm just learning it as you are. good riddance.
Yes, good riddance is right. So we had the teabaggers back in 2010, and they were like fun to laugh at, and they weren't that dangerous. But then they sort of morphed into what the alt-right, and we started learning a lot of stuff about the alt-right. Well, we hadn't heard a whole lot of chatter about the alt-right recently. Now they've morphed into, I guess, Trump's army. Is this all a continuation of the same group, the same radicalized group of right-wing, what I call terrorists?
I do think that there is a lot of overlap between these different movements that you have identified. Each are kind of learning from each other. What we saw on Wednesday was the convergence of a lot of different groups, some kind of picking up the momentum that carrying forward the momentum of that Tea Party moment. You saw a lot of sort of militia types, a lot of 3%er types, but also younger activists, younger participants, people who've been radicalized during the Trump period who weren't necessarily around for the Tea Party movement, who are bringing a different kind of sensibility. And what we've seen particularly since the election itself is that there's been a series of protests in Washington, D.C., where these different groups are converging, are organizing together, are taking up space in the street together, are getting in fights with people, causing violence, that, you know, this strengthens the bonds between these different currents. And that really culminated spectacularly and violently on Wednesday.
The chat room, by the way, is yelling at me that the teabaggers were dangerous, that I may have gotten a kick out of their idiocy, but there was a dangerous element to them. There has been a dangerous faction, while especially the Trump administration, Brendan, has been talking about the left, liberal, radical, Antifa nonsense. The real danger has been on the right. We've been warned about this not only by the FBI and Department of Homeland Security, but groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center. We know they're out there. This administration particularly has ignored those warnings and built up this fictional left-wing radical Antifa violent faction. Is it this administration, or has this has been going on? This went on through the Obama administration too, didn't it?
It certainly did go on through the Obama administration. And I mean, early in the Obama administration, his DHS capitulated to pressure from the Republican Party to rescind a report on the infiltration of white supremacists through federal law enforcement. So this is a much longer history that is coming to a head in this moment. But I think we should not lay this all at Donald Trump's doorstep. He has been an important accelerant in this equation, but he's just a part of it.
So the book you have coming out, Blood Red Lines, where do you go with that? Where does it take us?
I mean, this is in large part, you know, what the argument of the book is that this history extends much further back than the beginning of the Trump administration and is going to be with us for a long time after Trump. I am specifically using the lens of immigration politics to analyze what's going on the far right and the shifts and realignments and the fractures that are happening both in the Republican Party and in the Democratic Party, because I don't think that we can look at these things in isolation. And then looking, and then the book also, you know, I have spent a lot of time talking with organizers and activists, doing solidarity with migrant communities. I spend time, you know, down in Tucson with people who are doing desert aid work, labor organizers working with undocumented workers, and looking at how, you know, trying to think the people who are looking for a positive vision of how to bring justice to this very, very, as you said, very strange time that we're living in.
It is a very strange time. So obviously, I believe that the violence is all on the right. There are going to be bad actors in any sphere. It's going to happen. For the most part, all the racial justice protests we saw throughout the summer were peaceful. I believe that the moments of violence that sprung up happened for a couple of reasons. One is the police response to the peaceful protesters made them defend themselves because the police got violent. And two, there were infiltrators. Am I wrong on any of that? Is there a violent faction on the left that I'm conveniently ignoring?
I guess I would ask what you mean by infiltrators. I think we have to be very careful.
Agents
about...
provocateur.
I'm sure that there are, in very limited circumstances, some agents provocateur from the far right who took it upon themselves to try to incite violence. I think that they would actually struggle to do so because, you know, both the movement for Black Lives, the nascent kind of socialist and left-wing movement that we have in this country, the labor movement, these are the people who are active in these things are experienced protesters, are experienced demonstrators who know how to conduct themselves in these kinds of situations and are not just going to get into fights with cops willy-nilly. That being said, there certainly are all over the country elements within these movements who will prioritize self-defense. And when the cops or the fascists do initiate violence, there are people who are going to be willing and not just willing, but are prepared to fight back. But I think that, again, that is a calculation that is made because the people who do so understand that in doing so, they invite really brutal state repression, but are making the calculation that in that particular moment, defending their communities is the most important thing to do. And sometimes that requires violence.
Right. The rights narrative about, and I'm doing air quotes for those listening on radio only, Antifa. Do you examine Antifa in your in the book? When I talk about they, I believe that sometimes there are agent provocateurs from the right infiltrating what were peaceful protests on the left. That's what they said this was originally on a Wednesday night. Oh, it was Antifa. We didn't do this. This was all Antifa. Can you definitively explain anything about Antifa in quotes?
Yes. I have spent quite a bit of time with anti-fascist organizers and activists. I can categorically say that Antifa was not responsible for what happened on Wednesday.
I am
willing to go out on that limb. Mm-hmm. But I do think that, you know, like, yes, there are anti-fascist organizations and active, I shouldn't say organizations. There are anti-fascist,
sympathizers
networks and there are anti-fascists in this country for whom street violence is a very small part of their lives as activists. I would say that most anti-fascists do a lot of work to avoid getting into fights. They try to impede the work of racists, of fascists, through other means. But in their analysis, sometimes violence is necessary. And will, you know, that is part of their, that is part of their political calculus.
Right. But there is no umbrella organization. They're not taking money from George Soros and doling it out to people like me who are anti-fascist, to get violent, to go up against these other people. That's not.
No, these are all extremely local formations of people who are many of them are just normal, like are normal people.
Right. Like, they're like they're, me. Hello.
Yeah. Right.
Not a fascist.
And there are people who, for whom anti-fascist activism might be a part of their larger political lives. They're involved, like I said, in labor organizing and migrant solidarity work. Mm-hmm. But you know, in places like Portland, where, you know, doing things like that invites repression from, invites reaction from fat, from local fascists.
Sure.
And so like, there's no avoiding it.
Right. No, I hear you, but thank you for explaining that, because if for people who only get their news, again, doing the air quotes, from right wing sources, be it Fox or Newsmax or any of their crazy online sources, that's what they're told and that's what they believe. By the way, my husband, doubling as a producer, just handed me 2 Capitol cops were suspended, 1 arrested for involvement in riot. Do you think we're going to see more?
Oh, yes, definitely. I think that a lot of the cops that were on Capitol Hill on Wednesday probably had to make a strategic decision after having been overrun to not, you know, it's basically just like wave the white flag.
Yeah.
But you know, you saw cops taking selfies with people. You saw cops going out of their way to be accommodating. I would not be surprised if there were more to come.
It's stunning. In the Nation magazine, excuse me, you have the piece titled "A Preview of What's to Come." Hearing the warning, the advisory from the FBI about these in 50 states, capitals being marches or sieges or whatever you want to call them, planned, and events planned around the inauguration. What do you expect for the next week and a half?
I think it's going to be a pretty chaotic few days. I mean, to be honest, I think it's going to be a pretty chaotic few years.
Yeah.
It's always hard to know which one of these actions is actually going to get ugly. Because if there's one thing these people love, it's to talk a big game. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes they follow through, sometimes they don't. I think that categorically, the greater concern is going to be individual people who take matters into their own hands in the manner of the Walmart massacre or the massacre
right.
at the Tree of Life Synagogue. I think that these kinds of mass demonstrations that result in mass violence are much more difficult to pull off. But when they do happen, they are quite terrifying.
Yes.
And so I think that I do think that there will be more of these. I actually think that probably the inauguration will be so flooded with cops and so carefully watched that it will probably be okay.
Yeah.
But who knows? I mean, I try not to make predictions about these kinds
of things. Well, and then thanks to COVID, it's going to be a very toned down celebration. They're not they're asking people not to come,
right.
You know, stay home. It's very muted. There's not going to be a parade. I mean, the whole thing is going to be tamped down. And I guess that's a good thing. The timing on your book I hate to say it's fortuitous, although, you know, wow, what a time for it's out next week.
Yes, on the 19th.
Wow.
Available for pre-order now.
Okay. Blood Red Lines is what it's called. Brendan O'Connor is the author. Thank you so much for joining us today. What a horrible thing to have to talk about all the time in research, but at least you know it's there and can warn people about what is on the horizon, what we need to deal with. Do you think Biden is prepared? And what do you think about the people that he's brought on board for, like, Homeland Security and justice and like that? Any thoughts?
I absolutely do not think Joe Biden is prepared. I don't think that the Democratic leadership has any idea how to handle this or really understand the historical moment that we're in.
Do you own a gun?
I do not. I live in New York.
Oh, if you didn't. I live in Florida. If you were me, would you have a gun?
Probably.
Yeah. All right. Brendan O'Connor, thank you so much. I hope you'll come back, because I have a feeling we're going to be talking about this subject for a while, for a long time to come.
Thanks for having me, Nicole.
Thank you so much. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I know that wasn't very reassuring, but at least there are people out there giving accurate information about what's going on, about who is out there and what they're capable of. Again, you can read Brendan O'Connor in The Nation magazine, and the book, Blood Red Lines, comes out next week. All right, I told you we're going to switch gears in a moment, but we need a bit of a palate cleanser, I think, before we launch into what the hell is going on in Florida. There's always something going on in Florida, you know that. So we'll take a quick time out. Progressive Voices, we'll see you in a moment. Hopefully that worked. And for everybody else, I don't know if it worked or not. Let's see. I threatened to play this on Friday, and I ran out of time. So we'll have a break from the stress for a few laughs, because that's important, because if we don't laugh, we know what happens. So with that, I give you the latest from the one and only Randy Rainbow Sedition.
Us here today do not want to see our election victory stolen by emboldened radical left Democrats, which is what they're doing, and stolen by the fake news media.
A twiddler with no proof. Sounds like a horrible idea for a musical, no? Or at least a horrible idea for a president. Well, in just a couple weeks, he won't be anymore. And whether you're happy about it or not, there are rules that must be followed. Like my personal rule of not repeating a song I just parodied a few months ago, but you people won't stop f***ing DMing me to request it, so here we are. More importantly, you ask, how does a desperate lame duck president and his bootlicking minions with no hope or evidence try to overturn an election they've clearly lost multiple times? I can tell you in one way.
We will not take it anymore.
Sedition!
Sedition! Sedition!
Huh? Look it up.
Sedition!
Girl.
Sedition! Sedition!
We had an election that was stolen.
Sedition!
La 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 la.
This was a fraudulent election.
Who would attempt to rally up a mob and try to stage a coup to steal a fair election? Who's so far clemped he couldn't hold his job? He's begging like a little bitch.
Ooh. The loser. The loser.
It was a landslide election.
Sedition. The loser.
Stop the steal.
Sedition.
We won the election, and it's not fair to take it away from us.
Could anyone defend the calls he's made? It strikes on free democracy. Maybe they would finally grow some balls if they'd stop thinking only of their own damn selves.
Consider the evidence.
Ambition, ambition.
This is my opportunity to stand up.
Ambition, election.
This was a fraudulent election.
Sedition.
I need 11,000 votes. Give me a break.
He says he only needs 11,000 votes to win. He swears they stuffed the ballot box, but girl, they didn't.
Delusion.
Delusion. commission.
Election.
The election that just occurred, quote, was rigged.
The Constitution clearly states it's time that he concede.
Get out.
Maybe once they lock him up, he'll finally learn to read.
Where?
In prison.
A nice spread.
Sedition. Transition. Transition.
Nobody knows what the hell is going on.
Sedition.
We will never concede.
Who would attempt to study a monumental
sedition, his lies would be as shady as a twiddler with no proof.
This was a fraudulent election.
Girl, bye.
Today is the day American patriots start taking down names and kicking ass. The whole world is watching, folks. If you just roll over, if you don't fight.
Have trial by combat.
You don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
Expel them, arrest them, impeach them. 25th Amendment now.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
All right. I'm back, and we're going to change gear now, or gears. Is it gears? All right. So, you know, I'm in Florida, and you know that I tend to call it Florida for a reason. In fact, I had my old pal Deborah Newell Tornello on Friday because we hadn't done a good round of Oi, Florida lately. Let me remind you what our theme song sounds like. It goes like this. Yeah, just like that. Oi, Florida. And I feel like, well, I had such high hopes. I had such great, let me bring in our guest. Ryan, is it Calabrese or Calabrese? How do you say your name?
Ryler Calabrese.
Ryler Calabrese. I knew that it was Ryler. Sorry, Rye. I know we call you Rye. So let me back up a little bit. I had a dear friend. I do this radio show. I'm based here in South Florida. And I'm a progressive. I'm a liberal. I'm not afraid of that word. And I had a friend who I've known for years. I met Mitchell Stolberg when he invited me to come speak at the Oakland Park Democratic Club some years ago. Because I do a radio show and I'm from South Florida and we became friends. And Mitchell Stolberg was my guy here in South Florida. He was my progressive activist guy. I knew if there was an action going on anywhere, a protest, a meeting, anything, Mitchell was the guy. He was the South Florida head of Progressive Democrats of America, of the Democratic Progressive Caucus of the Florida Democratic Party, or whatever their name is. He was the guy. My daughter just turned 21. And when she wanted to get involved, when all the Black Lives Matter stuff was happening, I'm like, you know what? Here's Mitchell. I'm going to introduce you. He's the guy. You talk to Mitchell. He'll tell you what group to join, where to go, what to do. He's the guy. Well, a few months ago, I want to say probably August, maybe September, Mitchell called me and he said, how would you like to become a Broward Democratic Party precinct committee woman? And I'm like, the Florida Democratic Party, Broward Democratic Party, are you seriously? And he said, yes, we have a plan. We are going to stage a takeover, a progressive takeover of the Florida Democratic Party. I'm like, fuck yeah. Yes. Okay, I'm in. So I filed my paperwork, did it all, ran unopposed in my precinct. So I got in. I'm a precinct committee woman in Broward County District E018. And here we are. Well, unfortunately, for a number of reasons, Mitchell Stolberg passed away. He died. People, listeners of this show know, because I came on the air and I cried. We lost an amazing human being and a great activist. And I got to tell you, Broward County, the bluest county in the state of Florida, is also probably the most apathetic county in the state of Florida. I've gone out to a million, well, not a million, because there haven't been a million. Every time there was a protest, and they tend to have them at the federal building in downtown Fort Lauderdale, but an impeached Trump, a no war with Iran, or whatever it was, Mitchell was usually among the organizers of the event, and I'd go out there and we'd get 50 people, 75 people, and we'd hold our signs and people would honk and we'd wave and then we'd go home. And but Mitchell was always in it for the right reason. So he died and I had no guidance on this thing other than I was a new Broward County precinct committee woman from Florida. Well, luckily, I know a few other people who are involved in the movement, and Hillary Keys of West Palm Beach, and she invited me to the Slack group. So I got in on this and started meeting some of the other people who were involved with what I came to know was known as the project. But then I learned a little bit more. But honestly, Rye, I've gotten it all in bits and pieces. Because Mitchell died, and unfortunately, he worked alone. I mean, he did all this stuff on his own, and nobody had his paperwork. Nobody has the lists of who he recruited or anything. So we here in Broward County were definitely at a loss. And so now I bring you in. So I met you in the Slack group as I'm learning about all this is going on. We had statewide elections for county committee people, and they get to vote on this in the state elections and all that. So this is where I sort of back up and ask you, what did I get wrong so far? What can you fill in? What holes can you fill in for me about how this all came together?
Okay. So the thanks for having me on, first of all. And
thank you.
And yeah, you are totally right that losing Mitchell was a massive blow to progressive politics in Florida, particularly South Florida. He was a staple, and yeah, we were all very sad for losing him. So this started, the project is referred to often as Storm the Castle. Okay. It's a name that has been around for a long time for the idea that progressives would dementor the Florida Democratic Party en masse and try and take it over, at least make some important reforms and that sort of thing. So we've sometimes used that name, but the group is actually called Not Me, Us Florida. It grew out of the Bernie Sanders 2020 campaign, and even further back from the Bernie Sanders 2016 campaign. Wow. And all the fights in between, really. So in March, when the Bernie Sanders campaign ended, a bunch of the organizers from around Florida, the campaign used a distributive organizing model where there were Bernie victory captains in different cities across Florida that essentially held their own events, phone banks, door knocking, and that sort of thing. And they pretty much were the grassroots organizers, in their local communities. Those people got together at the end of the campaign on a call and were just like, well, Sanjay Patel, who was the state field director for the Bernie campaign and is a state committee man in the Democratic Party, doing this project last time in 2016, he had the one successful project, him and his wife, Stacy, and a bunch of progressives took over the Brevard County Democratic Party completely in 2016. So from top to bottom, completely controlled by Bernie Sanders style progressives. Nice. And they were able to essentially resuscitate a completely dead organization. And they're one of the most effective local Democratic parties in the state now. And they have never backed down from being like the forefront of pushing for progressive policies. And then Sanjay became the state field director for Bernie again. Stacey made a run for the FDP chair in 2017 when there was a midterm vacancy. So pretty much the idea was to take the Brevard model and push it out all across the state. So we, as you said, clandestinely organized by word of mouth through the Bernie Victory Captains. Again, this was during the pandemic. So, mm-hmm. you know, it was, everything was digital anyway, and that sort of thing. So we didn't see much of a need for, we saw some benefit to keeping it quiet because we know that the old guard of the Democratic Party loves to hang on to power, matter how inept they are. Yeah. So we kept things quiet, particularly because in the bigger counties that have a lot more say over what happens with the Florida Democratic Party, there's just an old boys club, more or less, that maintains power and will round wagons for, you know, to protect their power from new people coming in and pushing for reforms. So we kind of quietly organized and we wound up running precinct committee captains. Yeah.
So there were a thousand people like me throughout the state who said, yes, well, I'm in, we'll do this.
I'm in. Yes. And we were fairly good at vetting people to know that they were like solid people who wanted change, nearly to a person. These are people who had no involvement with the Democratic Party previously.
Yep.
Exactly. And that's a good thing. And actually the Democratic Party in usual circumstances, Democratic Party activism ruins good progressives. it turns them into mindless blue cheerleaders and sycophants, and they just lose any idealism that they go into the party with. But we figured if we brought enough people in and kind of were able to reinforce ourselves throughout the project, that wouldn't happen, and we would create our own kind of gravity and culture, like coming into the party, so none of us would feel the temptation to sell out, essentially.
Right.
So we did pretty good. You know, there are now, you know, nearly, I don't think every single person won their precinct election, but you know, there are nearly 1,000 precinct committee people.
Right. So let me jump in here for a second, because from my end, what happened on Slack, we organized, and in Broward, each county has their own elections for a state committee man and a state committee woman. And, sorry, my daughter's calling me. So we organized, we got behind a certain slate. Broward, we're disorganized because we don't know who we have, because there's, mm-hmm. we don't know how many of me there are here. And it was, sorry, it was giant clusterfuck down here in South Florida. It was just horrible. The day-long election, which was done over Zoom, took something like 7 hours. I mean, it was just ridiculous. People who do not know what the hell they're doing. It was embarrassing. So we got a state committee man, state committee woman, the same people we've had here in Broward County for as long as I've lived here, I think. And they're horrible. Yeah. But other counties, Leon County, where you are, swept, right? Other counties involved in the project did great. Yes?
Yes. Yeah. We were able to get 15, we actually got a few more than 15 elected. We had a few major defections from some of the people who, at the end, when it came to like electing people to the state committee people, sometimes we unfortunately put our faith in people who had more experience in the party because they had more of a chance of getting votes from other places. And those people wound up not panning out so well for us. Really the people in the house were the ones. Yeah. and that's unfortunate, but we have 15 people still at the state committee level who are elected, including myself, that make up 25% of the power of the state committee vote, which is, you know, not obviously not a majority, but it was enough to make waves, and it gives us like, it allows us to stake out a major faction within the Democratic Party. We made a go at winning the FDP leadership. We didn't. Unfortunately, the worst candidate got elected.
Okay, yeah, I need to stop here for a second, too. Yeah. So the elections were held on Saturday. Now, I didn't get to vote in the election. I didn't even realize that until Saturday. The state committee, the county committee people we elected got to vote. So, yes. And that went on apparently forever. We had a great candidate that our block got behind. But the party went for Manny Diaz. Manny Diaz, yes. Former Miami mayor, former, I don't know what he is, but he's certainly not a progressive, and I doubt he's even a Democrat. What the hell is the party thinking?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what goes through people's heads, honestly. I mean, like, it's the definition of insanity. They try the same thing over and over again and get the same results every time. I mean, the Florida Democratic Party is a laughingstock.
It really is a pathetic mess.
And, like, anyone who, like, and the thing is that the Democratic Party, the actual infrastructure, you know, before new people came in, is filled to the brim with people who, despite all of that, go around saying, I'm a proud Florida Democrat. And to be a proud Florida Democrat is just pathetic. Yes. I mean, it really is. It's a failed institution that is just not good at doing anything. It can't win elections. We're down almost 2-1 in the Florida House. We haven't won statewide elections barely at all in like 20 years.
And registered Democrats outnumber registered Republicans in this state.
Yeah, by almost a million, I think. Yeah, it's pathetic.
It is pathetic.
I honestly don't know what to do with these people. And like now we have to figure out like how to move on from here. But part of why we did this was because we didn't want to lose the momentum from the Bernie Sanders campaign. That we felt that was a historic movement, essentially the development of a movement, because he wasn't just a candidate. He was someone that was pushing for grassroots involvement in politics and a movement. And we didn't want to let that die.
I still have a Bernie sticker behind me. I'm a Bernie person. I know.
Excellent. And so we didn't want to, most of us, we don't have a political home. We are a two-party system essentially by law. I mean, like there are other parties, but really our electoral system makes it so that there are really only two with a shot.
That's right.
And so anyone to the left of the kinds of people who have been running the Democratic Party for generations, like I'm 40 years old and the Democratic Party has always been awful my entire life. I have never identified with them. I have always been to the left of the party. And only when Bernie ran did I actually even register as a Democrat. And now I think, you know, with AOC getting elected and Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, now Jamal Bowman and Cori Bush, like the left, the socialist, you know, like I'm a proud socialist. I ran as a socialist.
We're a lot of DSA members in this group, in this project. I know a number of them and a lot of people who are really reluctant to register as Democrats, but they realized that what this project was about was taking over the Democratic Party from the inside, having a voice and moving them to the left, which is the only way we're going to affect change.
Exactly. And it's part of the like kind of inside outside strategy that I'm a DSA member myself. And I think that their view of electoral politics is the correct one, that the Democratic Party essentially is something that we need to use because of the at least the electoral line is needed to be used because of just the way the system is. But that outside organizing is paramount and that we need to be organized in our workplaces and our neighborhoods and that sort of thing. But this is why kind of the project of trying to take over the internal aspect of the Democratic Party is partly because if the Democratic Party was actually organized as an effective grassroots organization, there is a skeletal system that is actually interesting to kind of organize around, because you have to organize precinct by voting precinct to get these committee seats. And so that's kind of our intention, is to essentially grow a left-wing electoral network that is organized neighborhood by neighborhood throughout a county and then networked throughout the state. So this is how we hopefully from now. So this was the first project of something that we hope that goes on, and that we are going to try and coalition with groups like DSA, Dream Defenders, Sunrise Movement, and that sort of thing, to essentially build a left-wing electoral power-building project that organizes neighborhood by neighborhood to win local elections first, because most of them are NPA, so we can run for city commission seats, county commission seats. Right. We had a DSA member win
NPA, no party affiliation. And here's one thing, and I just want to make sure we're running low on. We've got like 4 minutes left, but I want to. The idea is still great. Florida is Florida. It just is. I mean, but this could work in states all over the country. I think you put together a great pilot program here that other states can pick up on. And that's why I really wanted you on this program, because we're not only here in Florida, we're everywhere. And if there are people, Democrat progressives in other states who think that is a great idea, we should get the ball rolling. Can they contact you? Who should they get in touch with to get the whole organizational lay of the land?
Yes, I would be more than happy to help. And we're just one of several attempts in other states as
really?
Well. And
good.
The thing about the Democratic Party, though, is that it is kind of like a federated system, that the state parties are actually organized wildly differently, which is why we have like caucuses in some states for primaries and all that kind of stuff, because the actual state party, they can be organized very differently from each other. So these elections happen at different times of, and that sort of thing. Like, you know, Florida was the only one that had internal elections this month. You know, I don't know when other states have them, but the general concept mostly can happen in other states. And actually, one of the, I encourage everyone to look to reclaim Rhode Island as one of the best examples of, they didn't take over the Democratic Party, but they took the network. Very similar to Florida, but for Rhode Island, but they essentially made like a Justice Democrats essentially style organization, but with a community building aspect to it. And it's kind of what we hope to model ourselves after going forward. Please, if anyone's interested, I'm more than happy to try and get you connected with other people. I was helping organize at a semi-national level for the Bernie campaign. So I have connections places, and I'd love to put anyone in touch with other people who might be on this, have the same idea, so that you can get things kickstarted. You can email us at notmeusfl@gmail.com.
Oh, okay.
You can get in touch with me, I guess on Twitter. I don't use it that much, but I have that.
Or
handle.
They can get in touch with me and I'll get in touch with you. Yeah, people know they can always email me, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com. I'm easy. So that's great, because I think this is necessary. And we have picked up a lot of seats in Congress. I mean, you mentioned a few high profile, but there's people like Marie Newman in Chicago. And there are a number of progressives. The squad, I think, is going to be much expanded this year.
Yes.
So, you know, I was discouraged with the results of the Florida. I went Manny Diaz. And then I thought, why bother? And I have a friend who I've known for a long time, Mario, who's up in, I don't even know what county, who's like, I'm done. I'm just done. And it's a big loss, because he's somebody who works in politics, who has been a campaign manager who we could really use. But Florida is Florida. So we're going to keep going. We're going to ride this power as much as we have, as little as we have, into a bigger thing and try to exert some pressure here in Florida.
Exactly. Yep. We just got to keep going and just stay together and create our own thing. Where we've succeeded, we'll see what happens in the counties where we have control, like in Leon and a few others. We have full control, and we'll see what we can make of the Democratic Party at the local level, and in areas where we share control or we're in a minority but we're a large voting bloc, we'll see how we can exert pressure to make reforms and then grow on the outside to come back in 4 years and take it over.
Now, Leon County is Tallahassee. You're in the land of Governor Moron death sentence. How is that? We got to get him out of there in 2 years.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that we're examining the next stages in terms of we think we're going to actually, with the distributed model, we're going to push people to try and win city commission seats, but then also come together networked through the state, probably for the governor's race. We're going to pick one big race and try and throw our network behind getting a good progressive through on the primary and then to win that election. I think that is probably a good bet.
Yes. We came close last time. Andrew Gillum proved to be less than ideal after the fact, but I thought we had it. And once again, we Florida'd it. So we have death sentence up there, and we need to get rid of him. We also need to get rid of Voldemort Rick Scott, too. So we've got our work cut out for us in 2022. Ryler Calabrese, my new friend up there in Tallahassee, thank you. Thank you for explaining it all to me. And know that you have got someone here in Broward County. I'm here to beck and call, whatever I can do. I don't know. Thank you, Ryan. It's great talking
to
you, and we'll
talk
again soon. All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Oh, boy. So that's the story, everyone. I've been teasing it for the longest time, and now you know what happened. All right. Tomorrow's Tuesday. Gotta Laugh will be here, and we're out of time. I'll see you tomorrow. Hang tough, everyone. Bye.